The estate's going to have to pay the attorney's fees for the lawyer to come down to the hearing to justify the fee that he's already justified. So I've been here 13 years, and I think it works pretty well.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
The committee is going to stand in lunch recess until 1:30.
No. You know how long it's going to take? How many more we got? Okay. How you doing?
We're going to recess to 1:30. I think we're going to get started, even though I'm the only member here. The Senate Committee on Jurisprudence will reconvene. And we'll call Glenn Karish, Alvin Golden, and Harry Wolf as a panel. Please, if you'd, in what order, whatever order you select, introduce yourselves and say who you represent and proceed with whatever words of wisdom you have for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Glenn Karish. I'm an estate planning and probate attorney here in Austin. I'm the chair-elect of the Real Estate Probate and Trust Law section of the State Bar of Texas. On my left is Alvin Golden, who's also an estate planning and probate attorney here in Austin. He's one of our former chairs. And on my right is Harry Wolf, who is a council member on the Real Estate Probate and Trust Law Council, and he practices in San Antonio. And we are delighted to be here at the committee's request to provide whatever kind of assistance we can. We, as you know, Senator, we are, our section, which has 7,000 members across the state, is very active in drafting legislation in the probate, guardianship, and trust law area. We have standing committees that are working constantly evaluating necessary changes and suggesting changes to the legislature. And for example, we have a committee that works on guardianship law changes all the time. Linda Gores from Houston is our chair. And we just want to make sure that you know and that the committee knows and your staff knows that we will be happy to help in any way we can. We have attorneys who are specialists in the areas who are available on our committees to work on proposals and do whatever kind of tweaking that the committee thinks is necessary. And we appreciate all that the committee has done for us in the past and would be happy to help in any way we can.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if anyone else has anything. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I appreciate y'all's being here very much. You were here for the morning. I think I saw all three of you out in the audience. So if you've got anything to say in relation to the suggestions that were made by Judge Herman and others as to proposed rewordings or additions to the sections in question, we'd be glad to hear from you on that.
Well, one thing I saw you ask about in the morning, we absolutely have no problem with the idea that lawyers should not be paid legal fees for services other than legal services. We think that's what the law is now, and that's certainly been the experience in our practice. So if a lawyer is a guardian, he shouldn't be charging for legal services to take the ward to the barbershop.
Right.
We have no problem with that. The guardianship code has a number of places where there's a best interest standard. If there's a need for a best interest standard on the sale of real estate, then perhaps that's a place where it should be specifically mm-hmm. placed. But we think guardians are required to act in the best interest of
right.
the ward and have no problem with that.
Okay, thank you. Y'all have anything, Mr. Golden, Mr. Wolf?
Nothing to add.
I hate for you to drive all the way up from San Antonio, Harry, and I tell the committee anything. Yes, sir, Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chairman. The only thing I'd like to add to what Mr. Carey said is that it's very, very difficult to legislate good judicial conduct, just like it's very, very difficult to legislate good conduct for lawyers, for legislators, for any other walk of life. We are not prepared, as the chair knows. Our process is we go to committees. The committees study things. It comes to the full Real Estate Probate and Trust Law Council. We review the committees. We seek expert advice, and ours is a very deliberative process. So we're not prepared to address specific legislation today. But as Mr. Carrish said, we are happy to be available to the committee at any time to give our input as to language and as to how any given proposed change might affect the judicial system as we presently know it. I don't think the system is broke. I think there are things that go wrong in the system just like any other system, but I think it's basically sound, and it's just a question of seeing if there are ways to improve it.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your being here. Thank all three of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can we call my office at this time? I have a 2 o'clock appointment. Ben Turner's bringing the county commissioner here to meet me. We're not going to be through here by 2. So we need to call Ben Turner's office and tell him, well, he can come if he wants. But understand, I'm going to be well, but I'm not going to be able to leave presiding because I'm probably going to be the only one here. I think I've got a 3 o'clock. Yeah, why don't they come about? Why didn't he just call back about 3 o'clock or so and see where we are?
Okay.
I mean, let's kind of try for 3:30.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, okay. Chair calls Susan Norman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
My name is Susan Norman. I'm an attorney from Houston. I represent a man named Perry Lee Whatley. I would like to read you first Mr. Whatley's statement, since he cannot be here today. My name is Perry Lee Whatley. I am a former United States Marine, and I serve the great state of Texas and my country with honor. I retired from ExxonMobil in Baytown, Texas, and retired with a pension, which I can no longer obtain, to take care of myself. I am now 84 years old, having celebrated my birthday in August in the company of my wife. You might be wondering why I cannot be here today, so I've asked my lawyer, Susan Norman, to read my statement to you. I am not here because probate judge Mike Wood, since 2005, has made it impossible for me to travel, move around, transact my business, and take care of my wife. Mike Wood has stated publicly that when he finds me, he will have my wife and me brought to court in chains. I will try to explain what he has done in simple terms so that the lawyers on this committee can draw legal conclusions. After my first wife, Florence, died, I married Don Johnson, who was my caregiver, in 2005. We were married in the Baptist faith, and we expected that this would be respected. The affidavit of our pastor is submitted today. Our relationship to the Lord has been no impediment to Mike Wood's abusing his office to separate us. In 2004, I revoked all powers of attorney given to anyone. I then executed a new power of attorney in favor of my wife and gave her the sole authority to speak for me. That has not been an impediment to Mike Wood, despite my desires that we be left alone. A federal judge's order sums up what occurred until November 15th, 2005. And I've asked Susan to read portions to you and to submit his order. On September the 29th, 2005, a Jimmy Walker, a man who gives money to Wood for his campaigns, was allegedly appointed as my guardian. When this appointment was made, I was not served with notice to appear. I was in the hospital in Massachusetts. My wife was not served with notice. I did not know Jimmy Walker. In the early morning hours of November 10th, 2005, Walker, along with a Ray Black, another Wood supporter, came to Massachusetts and put me on a plane to Houston without telling my wife and leaving her there alone. I could imagine how scared she was when she came to see me and I was not there. Walker and Black have billed me for that trip when they forcibly brought me back without Dawn. As of that date, November of 2005, I had not been in Mike Wood's court. And to this date, Mike Wood has never seen me except maybe on television. In June of 2006, the Court of Appeals declared that what Mike Wood did, he did without any legal right, without jurisdiction, and that all he did since September 9th, 2005, was void. This again was no legal impediment to Mike Wood, to Walker, or to Black, who kept my monies and have failed to return them. Dawn and I are broke, yet Wood and his friends have my monies, my home, my credit cards, and bank accounts. What is disturbing to me is that the Court of Appeals said that Mike Wood had no right to do this, and now I am told and have the records to prove that it was Mike Wood that initiated a secret elder abuse petition accusing Dawn of abusing me. Despite being told by the state that I was not being abused, Wood, Walker, and Black have persisted in trying to take my monies and separating me from Dawn. Dawn is my wife, and I worked for my monies, not these lawyers and Mike Wood, who have stolen my golden years from me. I have asked that the Court of Appeals opinions be submitted to you so that you can see what has transpired. Mike Wood has stated publicly that he has twice found me incompetent, and yet I have never met Mike Wood nor seen him. I am told that he picked the doctor who alleged I was incompetent, that this doctor gives him money. Mike Wood has also called every judge connected in my fight to free myself from him, from Walker, and from Black. He has accused Dawn of abusing me so that he could appoint a guardian over me. The Adult Protective Services reports show that Dawn has never abused me, but in fact, has taken care of me in accord with my wishes. When I authorized Dawn to deliver funds to my lawyers to fight those lawyers, Walker and Black, Dawn acted at my direction. Wood disqualified every lawyer who would not do what he wanted to, which was to cooperate with Walker and Black. Until September 28, 2006, the Court of Appeals had not even issued an opinion in the underlying case, in the appeal of the underlying case. This was no impediment to Mike Wood's abusing his power and again signing an order while the case is on appeal, giving Jimmy Walker control over me and my estate without serving me with a single piece of paper, without serving me to come to court. While I do not want to be served, it would seem that if I am not served, I should not have my property stolen, and that when I choose my lawyers, no one should interfere with my lawyers either. Wood stated publicly that he was doing this for my best interest. That statement made on KTRK-TV by Wood was made in the belief that I would never get the APS, the Adult Protective Service reports. Once we got the reports, I authorized APS and my lawyers to release them to the Houston Chronicle and KTRK-TV and to file and make them public so that the whole state of Texas could see what Wood has done to me and to Dawn. Wood started the state action against me. He sought sanctions against Dawn in the case where he was a judge, and he called Walker in advance and agreed to give him my estate. A look at Walker's bonding application, which is provided herein, shows that 9 days in advance of the mandatory hearing required by law, Walker, Wood, and Black all determined I was incapacitated before any evidence was ever taken. Jimmy Walker paid almost $7,000 for a $2.5 million bond over Perry Lee Watley's estate before a hearing was ever held, for which Mr. Watley has never been served. I know that I deserve better than this, and I know that the good people of Texas deserve a system of justice that assures that their wishes, not the wishes of the judges and their friends, come first. I was once a millionaire, but I am now a pauper, as I told the 14th Court of Appeals on October the 2nd, 2006. Where did my monies, cars, credit cards, and bank accounts go? Ask Mike Wood why he went against my express wishes and gave my estate to three lawyers, Walker Black and a Roy L. Fuller, who brought the guardianship suit despite having no legal right to do so. This committee has one chance to protect senior citizens and to assure that this never happens again. I urge you to remember that all of you have parents and some of you have grandparents. Would you want Jimmy Walker and Mike Wood doing this to them? Would you want your widowed mother or father in their senior years being hailed into court by lawyers who never worked for their monies? Being threatened with chains despite having broken no laws? Wood used the word chains when he threatened Dawn and me on television. I worked, I paid taxes, I voted. I never broke the law in my life. Now in the twilight of my life, Dawn and I get Mike Wood and Jimmy Walker, who despite what the superior courts have said is wrong, keep taking and taking and taking and tormenting us. You have this chance to help those who can't help themselves. Please use it. That concludes Mr. Watley's statement. I would like to address some possible misconceptions from earlier testimony in this case. There's been a lot made here of recusal. that is an absolute dead gut level issue that must be addressed by the committee. This recusal issue in which Mr. Whatley is involved arose because on August the 3rd, 2005, Judge Wood was heard and seen to be communicating ex parte with the appointed ad litem in this case. A recusal was filed. There have been three mandamus opinions issued related to the Whatley case. For the non-lawyers, a mandamus opinion is extremely difficult to get. More mandamuses are denied outright than are granted. There has been one mandamus opinion issued against a judge of probate court number one in Harris County, Texas, who was assigned to hear the recusal of Mike Wood, the recusal of his next door neighbor brother lawyer. He refused to recuse himself. A judge under recusal, when a motion is filed, good, bad, or indifferent, has two choices, recuse or refer. Judge Austin said, I refuse to recuse myself, and conducted the hearing anyhow. The Court of Appeals said, that's wrong, vacate the order, it's void. We filed a recusal against Judge Wood. On June the 1st of this year, the Court of Appeals issued its opinion saying that every act taken by Judge Wood from September the 9th, 2005 forward was void for lack of jurisdiction. On September the 29th, 2005, when this alleged hearing took place where Jimmy Walker was appointed, the case was in federal court. We had removed it to federal court on a civil rights violation because we believed it was a civil rights violation for my client to have his money and his liberty taken with no service of process. Section 875 of the Texas Probate Code is jurisdictional. Service must be had. You must serve the ward, the proposed ward, the spouse, if there is one, family members, the proposed temporary guardian, who must be named in the application, and you must serve the appointed ad litem. Those citations are not part of this record, which I will submit to you, because they don't exist.
Ms. Norman, let me ask you, I'm hesitant to get into the details because I really want to hear your recommendations.
Yes, sir.
Of a way to improve the system. At the same time, so as not to be spending time not understanding what you're saying, are Mr. Whatley and his now wife, are they married under a license, a marriage license issued in the state of Texas?
Yes, they are. Okay. I have the affidavit of the pastor who married them here with me.
Then the other question is, do they live in Texas?
Yes, they do.
They live here?
Yes, they do.
Why haven't they been served?
They've not been able to be found to be served.
Are they hiding?
Mr. Whatley does not want to be served by a court with no jurisdiction. Everything that the court is currently doing, it's doing while the case is on appeal. Mm-hmm. The Court of Appeals has the only jurisdiction in this case. Mr. Whatley does not want to be served, and he has not been served.
Okay. Now, my understanding is that this all began as the result of Robert Whatley and Jeannie Anderson, who's his niece?
His niece and nephew.
Initiating guardianship proceedings?
They initiated guardianship proceedings once they found out he was married.
Mm-hmm.
He was okay until he got married, then it was, in their view, apparently he became incompetent the minute he got married. Now,
okay.
That was not a temporary guardianship proceeding. That was just a plain vanilla guardianship. We think he's incompetent. We want to be in control. The temporary guardianship has never been served on Mrs. Whatley. It's never been served on Mr. Whatley to appoint the temporary guardian, Jimmy Walker. The Court of Appeal, there was a trial in December 12th of last year, and Mr. Whatley was not present. His wife was present, but did not participate because her lawyer withdrew on that day. She was not allowed to participate. And orders were issued on December 14th. Those orders flow from the September 9th date that the Court of Appeals was considering in its mandamus, where we said, Judge, there was outstanding recusals which had not been referred, and we believe that prevented Judge Wood from going forward. The Court of Appeals agreed with us. They agreed with us on June the 1st when they issued their original opinion. They ordered Judge Wood to vacate orders issued on three particular days. And I will refer you back to what Judge Wood said this morning. The Court of Appeals tells me what to do, and I do it. That's not true in this case. The Court of Appeals told Judge Wood on June the 1st, vacate orders issued on three separate days, September 29th, October 13th, and December 14th of 2005. None of those orders has been vacated. On August the 8th, the Court of Appeals issued a supplemental opinion saying we meant what we said the first time. During this time, the underlying case was on direct appeal. On September the 28th, the Court of Appeals issued its appeal, its opinion in that appeal. We requested the appeal be dismissed, and they agreed. The appeal should be dismissed because there's no final order, because all the orders issued, signed by Judge Wood, were void for lack of jurisdiction. So you can't have a final order if the proceedings are void. Can't start over. I mean, they're just void. Until the Court of Appeals releases its case, which will be at a minimum of 60 days after September the 28th, there is no jurisdiction in the probate court number 2 for this case. And yet Judge Wood is conducting a trial next Monday on this same case. We've tried to recuse him. We can't get a judge. There's been one recusal hearing on one issue, and there was no surprise. Judge Burwell from Galveston, statutory probate judge from Galveston, denied the recusal. She didn't address the disqualification issue. We've also filed a disqualification against Judge Wood, because when we filed the first recusal, he filed a motion for sanctions against Mrs. Watley. That disqualified him. We've also got Senator Gallegos earlier said, go to the Judicial Conduct Commission if you've got the transcript. On the 29th of September, Judge Wood said in the transcript that, I don't know how they found out about Jimmy Walker. Somebody must have gotten horsewhipped. All I did was call him and tell him it was going to be an interesting case. Based on the strength of what Judge Wood says, if that's true, then Jimmy Walker spent almost $7,000 for a non-refundable $2.5 million bond, which states in the bond that my client has been found incapacitated. How did that happen? 9 days before the hearing in which he was to be determined whether he needed a guardian. Jimmy Walker is the guardian. Jimmy Walker has been reappointed by Judge Wood on August the 14th of this year. All of Mr. Watley's annuities are tied up. His house is tied up. His cars, a long time ago, Jimmy Walker sent something to the state of Texas freezing any activity on the vehicles. Credit cards are canceled. So he has no money.
So who's living in his house?
He has his wife's grandchildren living there. He's not living there. He's not there. They want to serve him so they can have some jurisdiction over him.
Is this the case where so many recusals have been filed at federal court that finally the federal court said, don't do this again?
Well, that's not exactly correct. That's a misstatement of the facts. The case was removed to federal court under a civil rights basis. On June the 2nd, a new federal judge, who we have good reason to believe was in contact with Mike Wood through various ways, remanded an original federal civil rights case back to probate court number 2 and issued an order. He did issue an order saying no more case, the Watley case could not be removed to federal court without his permission. We are appealing that order because it's a sua sponte, judge-generated sanction order, which nobody asked for, and is inappropriate. So that portion of that order is being appealed because it's a sanction. We're appealing the sanction. We consider and still consider that it's a violation of my client's civil rights to take his money and limit his freedom. Mr. Watley was under lockdown from September the 12th or 13th in Massachusetts until November the 10th. He couldn't, under Jimmy Walker's, under the alleged guardian's orders, he couldn't leave. He couldn't go to the doctor to get his broken hip repaired. Jimmy Walker determined that it was unnecessary. He couldn't have access to his wheelchair because the wife might take him out of the hospital or out of the nursing home. He was brought back to Houston on November the 10th by Jimmy Walker and Ray Black. He was locked down in a nursing home where Jimmy Walker testified he was spending $10,000 a month to make sure that there was security there so Mrs. Whatley could not take him out of the nursing home. That went on until June the 1st when the Court of Appeals issued their opinion. On June the 1st, he left the nursing home. And the nursing home, by the way, let him sign himself out. They did not consider that he was incompetent at that time. Mr. Whatley...
Why wasn't he served while he was in the nursing home in Houston? I don't understand that.
I don't know why he wasn't served in the nursing home.
Yeah, but let me tell you truthfully, we've got a number of other witnesses. We're interested in your recommendations for improvement to the system.
My recommendations for improvement to the system go right along with David Wukeson's proposed change to the Texas Government Code 25.00255, where the administrative judicial district judge would be the one who assigns, not a probate judge, not one of the 17 banded brothers, somebody else impartial. Because a recusal by its very nature is an allegation of bias against a judge. There's got to be something there. If it's frivolous, then sanctions could lie. For all the reasons that we have in this case, we believe the recusals are valid, but we've never gotten a hearing on them. The proposed changes. Although Section 875 prohibits ex parte appointments of temporary guardians, it's regularly done in Harris County. As witness my 9-day prior to the hearing bond paid for by the proposed temporary guardian, who was never named in the application for temporary guardianship. The remedy should be, should the judge not follow Section 875 of the Texas Probate Code, then the legislature can mandate that the Court of Appeals shall, not may, but shall grant mandamus relief vacating the appointment. If such relief is granted, all funds taken shall be restored to the estate before any further proceedings can take place. What is happening now with my case and with other cases, the friends of the court are using the ward's or the decedent's monies to finance their own participation in the process to the exclusion of anybody else's ability to fight. So the ward's money, he can't use his own money to fight. This will prevent the so-called guardian from keeping the funds and starting again while he retains monies that he either doled out improperly or kept for himself. In any action to recover based on a violation of Section 875, the district courts, not the probate courts, shall have original and exclusive jurisdiction over those matters to prevent the probate judge from blessing the theft by transferring the case to himself. Right now, if it's alleged that that an action is incident to either a guardianship or a decedent's estate, a probate court can suck that case right back into his own court. Under recusal, we've already dealt with recusal. There's got to be a change in Section 25 of the government code. It's got to allow for an unbiased and impartial judge to hear the recusal hearing. Ex parte telephone calls. In this particular case, there have been multiple phone calls acknowledged by not only federal judges, but Mike Wood himself, that he called other judges in other jurisdictions, federal judge at home, the probate judge in Massachusetts, working with them to continue the effect of the void orders and the guardian's 9-day early application. The legislature can cure this problem by including language that states in part, upon the filing of a motion alleging ex parte contacts, the judge at whom the motion is directed shall testify at hearing in full and shall disclose the nature, time, place, and context of the contact. The judge hearing the matter shall make findings regarding the ex parte contacts and shall, within 10 days, forward his findings to the State Commission on Judicial Conduct for its investigation. Ex parte contacts shall include other judges that the offending judge has contacted about the case or the litigants in the matters before him. Upon a finding of an ex parte contact by the judge, the visiting judge shall enter an order recusing the offending judge and shall vacate all the orders entered by the judge so recused. Right now, there are orders outstanding which are facially valid. They may be void as a matter of law, but to a constable, for example, in this case, Judge Wood has issued a contempt order against an intervener in the case named Michael Easton. He's issued a show cause, which the judge acknowledges on the record was never served, issued a writ of attachment for misdemeanor contempt, and set no bond.
Michael Easton?
Michael Easton is an intervener in this case.
No, I understood you to say that. Who is Michael Easton?
Is
he an intervener?
He is a paralegal. He's possibly the most skilled legal analyst I have ever met. And Mrs. Whatley assigned certain of her causes of action to him because she does not want to be in court fighting. And he is an intervener in the case, and Judge Wood has said he's in contempt and put no bond on him so that when he's arrested, he has no bond and will not be allowed to get out of jail unless Judge Wood says so.
And who is he employed by as a paralegal?
He's self-employed. He does work for me. He does work for various lawyers. Mm-hmm. He only works for lawyers.
Okay. There are no senators up here to ask questions but me, and I've asked all mine.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you
very
much for being here. I appreciate you being here. Chair calls John Sisko. You'd identify yourself and who you represent, Mr. Sisko, and proceed.
First, thank you for allowing me to be here today. My name is John Sisko.
Yes, sir.
I'm from Conroe, Montgomery County, and I represent my family, the Siskos, in the Herbert Sisko estate, which has been going on now for 5 years. At the time my father died, there were no debts. The estate was worth almost $2 million. Absolutely no debts. And I had bought the other heir's interest out. So I was the sole distributee and the sole beneficiary. Because of an environmental case that I had filed, Fulbright and Jaworski was able to get a little county judge in Montgomery County to appoint a dependent administrator over our protest. He appointed his own attorney who had no experience, never been an administrator before, had a very meager law practice, so meager that he admitted on being deposed that he couldn't afford liability insurance. Yet he put him in charge of a $1.5 to $2 million estate on a $1,000 bond. I went along with the program for the dependent administrator for a period of about 6 months, and I watched it. And I watched the dependent administrator come to work with his attorney, come to court with his attorney on all these different things they were doing to assist me. And they would show up with two and three secretaries who would sit there and work on knitting, read Bible, just read anything they wanted to, yet they were billing the estate $150 an hour as they sat there and read. The attorneys claimed he got $300 an hour, but he was discounting it for $200 an hour. But if he did an hour's work, he'd bill you for four. And to backtrack for 1 second, when this dependent administration first came in, I went and talked to this attorney, because he bragged that he was the king of the probates in Montgomery County. He was boss hog of the probate business. He looked me right in the eye and asked me what court I was in, and I told him Judge Mason Martin's County Court Number 2, and he said, I can get anything I want in there, depending on what position I want. He quoted me a retainer. He led me to believe he was taking me on as a client. Within 1 week, he changed horses and went to work for the dependent administrator. And when I asked him about it, he says, I go where the money is. And what I think what it amounts to in the state of Texas right now, the controversial Judge Wood would not like to change a thing. Most judges don't want to change anything, because it's the probate business in Texas is a cottage industry which allows corrupt, compromised, whatever words you want to use, judges to appoint their cronies to literally plunder and rape estates. And basically, it's set up to allow them, and it does allow them, to steal from the dead. And they have no qualms about who they steal from. Doesn't matter if your mother, my mother, anyone. They will temper themselves with, if you're high profile, they won't go after you. They don't care if you've got deep pockets. They prefer you don't have deep pockets to defend your position because it causes them to spend a lot of time in court. But they will go after the estate, literally rape it. And where it really gets complicated is, and these are all court appointees, and where they can really plunder an estate is if the attorney ad litem, who represents the ward, decides he's going to be in bed with the guardian or the guardian or the administrator, whatever. Anyway, they work in league together to just to plunder estate, and the judge just rubber stamps their bills. Whatever they want to put in there, it's approved. The legislation, I believe, is all right. The problem you've got judges that are beholden to different parties, that are corrupt, they're compromised. They don't care. They'll do whatever they can to let an estate be raped and take care of their friends. And they will take care of their friends. And I think the only way that I was able to get anything done, I couldn't see any way. I couldn't get any relief in Montgomery County. I finally went to Judicial Watch, via Judicial Watch, I was able to get, and I went to the media. And that's the biggest thing, is these judges like Judge Woods and these other judges that have got problems, they've got their star chamber there with their bully pulpit, and they're making all these deals for their cronies and their buddies. They do not want it out in the light of day. They don't want it out in the media. They want to keep it behind the four walls of their star chamber.
And now, Mr. Cisco, I'm going to ask you the same question I've asked nearly every witness that's appeared. What are your recommended changes? How can we improve the
You've
system?
Got to get these corrupt judges under control.
And how do
and
we
I don't
do
know
that?
How you do
how do
that?
We do that legislatively?
I don't know. I do know that that's the fly in the deal. You can pass all the legislation in the world, but if your judges are going to sit there and pay their allow their cronies to do whatever they want to, because it just snowballs, it perpetuates itself. They come over here, they run as an incumbent, and they've got all this war chest that they've gotten from these lawyers who they've allowed to plunder estates. But the probate business in Texas is a mess. It's obscene the way these judges allow these court appointees to take advantage and plunder estates. And what the correction is, you've got to figure out some way to make these judges accountable, have some kind of system and balances. The recusal process does not work. It is a joke. I recused this judge twice. I did go to the Judicial Conduct Commission, and it took almost 2 years. And we went to the Judicial Conduct Commission, and his behavior was so egregious that they removed him from my case. They ordered him off the case, took all probate courts cases away from him.
Mr. Alford, see, we got some action on his case for the...
2 years later.
Okay.
Well. 2 years later. And it also turned out, I couldn't, they're talking about, you're talking about transcripts here today. I couldn't get a clean transcript. I'd hear things that went on there and knew it went on. And get a transcript was altered. So I filed a complaint with the Court Reporter Certification Board on the court reporter's bond. Turned out the court reporter that had been there for 20 years, the only reporter this judge ever had, didn't have a license. So everything he had done for 20 years had no license. Every pellet thing, people were in jail on the pellets and everything else was worthless. All her records for 20 years was worthless. So I got her indicted and convicted. Guess what? The judge, the Honorable Judge Mason Martin, he made her his court recorder, which she don't have to have a license to be a court recorder. She's still there in a fiduciary capacity in Montgomery County. He chose not to run again because he was told not to run again by the Republican Party because we got him all over the newspapers. And I think that's the only thing working man's got, the public's got, is to get it exposed. But anyway, she's still there. The judge is through in January. She plans on retiring 20 years and getting 20-year pension based on a job that she never was qualified to have. And she's indicted and been convicted, but yet she's still reporting the court record. It goes back down. The bottom problem is the judges are corrupt. And maybe the probate business, which is a cottage industry of stealing from the dead and stealing from estates, it just perpetuates, because the money, the average person doesn't realize all the money that can be made with these clowns coming in there, and that's a good word, isn't it? If you want to call them crooks, whatever you want to, billing all these egregious records. I mean, it's unbelievable. I had, we filed recusal, and then to turn around the judge, of course, they threw it out. They billed the estate $12,000 to defend the judge on the recusal. This was the administrator. And the judge that recused it denied their fees. Said, no, you can't, no, you didn't prove up, you don't have any fees coming. They sent them back through, and the judge approved them. Anyway, we got this judge thrown out of there to show how corrupt the system is. We got him thrown out of there. There's so much heat from the newspaper, Channel 13 again, and all the various media that they transferred my case from Montgomery County over to Bryan with a sitting judge over there. And one other thing. Out of 3,000 pending probate cases in Montgomery County, they were all, when they took all these probate cases away from this judge that disgraced himself, they took them all but one, mine. I'm still assigned to that judge who has a sitting judge over in Bryan listening to the case. We go to Bryan and think, my God, we've got a new playing field, and the playing field ought to be level, and we've got a new day. We walk in there, the administrator turns around and looks at us with a fiendish look in his eyes and says, you can't win. Give it up. It's business as usual over here. And what happens? The first thing we do, he's got a new attorney from Bryan, who just happened to be a county attorney, serving with the county attorney with the farmers, with the judge. So he was tied with the judge. So he fires his attorney and hires the Bryan attorney now. And the first thing the judge does is give the Bryan attorney, the new attorney, over our objections, $20,000 retainer. We tell the judge, we've got a CPA here that works for the family and has for 20 years. He'll close this estate out. He gets up, stands up, and testifies and says, Judge, I'll close this estate out within 30 days, deal with any tax issues, and we'll go to the house. This will be closed. I won't charge you the state a dime. Denied. I think it's best interest of the state that we continue. So 2.5 years later, we're still continuing. And I've been the sole distributee of the estate. I was signed, and they knew that within 90 days. They knew that I was the sole, from the get-go, really. But within 90 days, they signed an order. A year later, they come back and reversed that order and say, you're not the sole distributee of the estate. We have phantom heirs that could be out here. And they did it completely against the civil rules procedure, which says, anyway, I won't go into all that, but we got that overturned. But the problem is your judges are just corrupt in the system, and for whatever reasons. I mean, you're talking about millions of dollars. It cost me, I've spent to get rid of, to try, so far on this estate, I've spent $600,000 fighting. He went into federal court and had a federal judge say the administrator had violated his fiduciary capacity. When this thing started, the administrator lived in a little modest rent house. He had a meager law practice. Today, he lives in a $350,000 house with a gigantic swimming pool, and it's all courtesy of the Cisco estate because he has a very legal, very meager law practice. And that's what it's all about. It's all greed-driven, cronyism, and judges allowing good old boys to do whatever they want to, and the reason they're good old boys, it's a clique, and it's based on campaign donations and clique. It's a total clique, and it's going to perpetuate you. I don't know how you stop it.
All right. I appreciate you being here, Mr.
Thank you for your time.
Senator Gallegos has one brief question that will require one brief answer.
All right.
And it'll be very brief. It'll be very brief.
We got
and I'm sorry I didn't hear all your testimony. Just finishing up my hamburger, but your statement that I just heard you say was that all probate judges in the state of Texas are corrupt. Is that what you said?
I don't say all of them are. I say many of them are. And like you've heard three examples on Woods today, there's probably another 30, 40, 50, maybe 100 you haven't heard about. And
so you're saying,
where there's smoke, there's fire.
Well, no. You're saying some, many, or all?
I'm saying many.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Cisco. Chair calls Mrs. John Ben Carolyn Tall.
welcome to the committee. If you'll identify yourself and who you represent and proceed.
I'm Carolyn Taub. I represent myself. In April of 2000, my beloved husband, John Ben Taub, died. Around the middle of the month, the next month, my attorney and a friend who wrote John's will and enjoyed a long friendship with John because they were both highly decorated pilots during World War II, Stuart Hainsworth, called to say we needed to probate his will. And I said, please, couldn't we wait a little while? I haven't even come to the realization yet that he's gone. And he said, no, we need to go ahead and do this because you need to start writing checks to take care of business and so on. He said it wouldn't take more than 15 or 20 minutes to complete. Well, we got into court, and Judge Rory Olson said, I need an appointed appraiser for properties. And Stuart Hainsworth said, well, there's really no reason to appoint any appraiser because she's the only interested party, and there's no need for appraisement, so I'd like to waive that, please. And he said, no. So he appointed a man named Frank Nadolny. And so this fellow called him, and I thought I'd go along with the judge's orders, and I asked him to give me a price on what his project would cost and let me know before he started it. Well, after a couple of weeks went by, my attorney called him and said, what is your figure to appraise the properties? And he said $78,000. Well, we were shocked. So I contacted an MAI appraiser who is a state certified, and he came into court with me and he said he could do the project for $9,500 and have it done in 2 weeks. Well, Mr. Nadolny said it would take him all summer long. So anyway, the judge said, no, I don't want him to do it. I want Nadolny to do it. So after about a year, this fellow came back. He had hired three other people to help him who also weren't MAI, and he presented a pile of so-called appraisals in my attorney's office, and my attorney